To come down if I want to get high. Yeah, I have to come down if I want to get high.
Hi, this is Riley James, and you're listening to 91.5 WMFO.
WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning, it's the 26th of June, 2019. My name is Arthur. The show is titled The Grand Hour. We're going to be here from 5 to 6 a.m. on Mondays, as opposed to 6 to 7. But today, I'm going to play from 5:05 to 7, as no one's coming in that the old time spot occupied by the Grand Hour. This morning I have the best of the Grand Hour, The first hour is going to be a Western double feature. The first one's Fort Laramie, entitled Audition Program, with an original air date of the 25th of June, 1955. This one features John Daner as Quinn. It's produced and directed by Norm Macdonald, the creator of Gunsmoke. Selected this one for its, well, its brutal violence. Again, this is Arthur, the Grand Hour, here on a new time slot, 5 to 6 a.m. on Wednesdays. Thanks.
Captain Lee Quint. Tales of the dark and tragic ground of the wild frontier. The saga of fighting men who rode the rim of empire. And the dramatic story of Lee Quint's Captain of Cavalry.
Sergeant Gorse.
Yes, sir.
Pass the word to dismount and unsaddle.
Right, Captain.
I'm going up on that little knoll. Maybe I can see Mr. Seibert's party from there.
I'll be right back.
Yes, sir. Dismount and unsaddle. Fingrays water. Dismount and unsaddle. Fingrays water. All right. You unfit that mount before you graze him this time.
Sure, Sergeant. I was just going.
Well, you do it, then. This mount on saddle.
We could make camp here, boat right there's water.
Yeah. We could go hunting and fishing, too. Maybe bake some bread.
If you don't like the Army, why didn't you stay in Louisville?
I was starving there, too. But at least in Louisville, I never had no Indians after my scalp.
You afraid of Indians, Bull Ride?
Sure. But I'm going to get me one. I got to get me an Indian.
Why?
Then I won't be scared no more.
Well, at least you're not in the stockade.
And that's just because Captain Quince needs me. B troop's supposed to have 83 privates full strength. I swear we're down to 60. Yeah, he needs me worse than I need him.
What's the matter, Boatwright?
Oh, nothing, Captain. Everything's fine. I like it out here.
You better like it.
Oh, sure be sitting around the stockade, sir.
Last time you were in the stockade, did you just sit around?
Well, no. No, but at least I didn't ride no horse out after Indians with an understrength troop.
You'll never make a garrison soldier, Boatwright.
Oh, I like the Army, sir.
Captain Quint?
What did you find, Mr. Seibert's?
We rode over there, sir, where the smoke was. There's a homestead, Captain. Sue.
Sue? Well,
that's enough, Boatwright.
Yes, sir.
Did they leave anybody there, Mr. Seibert's?
The man's still alive, sir. Corporal Mercer's with him. But the woman and the little girl, they're dead.
I see. What does the man say?
Nothing, sir. He's got no tongue.
Take charge of the troop, Mr. Seibert's. Sergeant Gorse and I'll ride over there.
Yes, sir. And, Captain, take a look at this.
Where'd you pick it up?
Sue. The only Indian the man killed before they got him.
The Seibert's? That's a Henry rifle, latest model. But the Indians have gotten their hands on guns like that. Let's move out, Sergeant. Here. How is he, Corporal?
Is he bad, sir? They burned him some, too, but he's still conscious. There's a slow way to die.
100 miles to Fort Laramie, Captain.
He'll never live that long. Sergeant, give me your revolver. You and Corporal Mercer start back. I'll catch up with you.
Yes, sir. Pull out, Mercer.
Think we'll go after them Sioux horse?
I'm a first sergeant, not a captain.
Well, I know, but you and Quince run this troop.
He's Captain Quince to you.
Sure.
And he runs his troop.
Sure.
Everything all right, Captain?
Everything's all right, Sergeant.
What's that?
Shut up and keep riding, Corporal.
Well, what do you say, horse?
Shut up, I said.
Sure.
Sergeant.
Sir?
When we get back, fall in a burial party.
Yes, sir.
See that those graves are cairned.
Yes, sir.
One other thing, Sergeant. Don't forget your revolver. That homesteader doesn't need it anymore. Quince reporting, sir.
Captain, I know you're mad because I ordered you back from chasing those Sioux last week.
You didn't see what they did to that Homestead family, Major.
I've seen their work before, Quince.
There'll be more of it if we don't stop them.
10 miles from this post, there's a reservation of 4,000 Sioux. An uprising there'd be far more serious than your little band that's marauding under Yellowknife.
You have enough troops to patrol the reservation, Major, and still secure Fort Laramie here. Give me just half of B Troop, and I'll run down Yellowknife and his renegades.
My orders are to keep a constant watch on the reservation and to secure Fort Laramie with all remaining troops.
Yellowknife is being supplied with rifles, Henry 44s.
I know.
Those are repeating rifles, Major.
I've reported this to Washington, Captain.
Whoever is smuggling those rifles has got to be stopped, or every brave on the reservation will join Yellowknife. In spite of your patrols.
I've received no change of orders, Captain.
We can't afford to wait, sir. Give me Sergeant Gorse and 3 men, and I'll at least find that gunrunner. I'll leave tonight, Major.
You will not leave.
Is that a direct order?
It is.
Am I interrupting, Uncle Ned?
Oh, come in, my dear, come in. My niece, Captain, Miss Terry Lawson. This is Captain Quince, Terry.
How do you do, Captain?
Ma'am.
Miss Lawson arrived while you were away, Captain. She's going to keep house for me if she doesn't change her mind about Army life.
Are you coming to the dance tonight, Captain Quince?
Dance?
Haven't you heard?
I decided to hold a dance tonight, Captain, for such officers as are available and for a few civilians from Laramie. It'll show the Sioux we aren't as frightened as they might think we are.
I see.
You're coming, Captain?
Do you think Washington can spare me for a dance, Major?
Washington?
Inactivity is a hard burden for the captain, Terry.
Oh.
But I'd suggest the captain be at the dance tonight.
Good day, miss. Major. Captain Quince reporting his order, Major.
You make it difficult, Captain. You remember my niece, Miss Lawson.
Good evening, ma'am.
Good evening, Captain. But it's Miss, not ma'am, if you please.
Sorry, Miss.
Wanted everyone possible to be here, Captain. For the sake of morale, you know.
Yes, sir.
A lot of the townspeople are here. Oh, there's Lieutenant Mapleton. Would you escort Miss Lawson, Captain? Excuse me. Oh, Mapleton.
My arm.
Thank you, Captain. You weren't in the war with Uncle Ned, were you?
No. I started out as a scout for General McClellan just before Lee ran him away from Richmond.
And you became an officer afterwards?
I was commissioned in the field, Miss Lawson. President Lincoln was mighty short of officers by 65. They needed officers, and I made a good one.
Captain, Uncle Ned says you know more about the Sioux than anyone at Fort Laramie. Do you think the rest of the reservation will make trouble?
I don't know, miss. I haven't been out there.
You mean you could tell just by going out there?
Wild Dog's an old friend of mine.
Who's Wild Dog?
He's a chief. He's about 80, but he's pretty smart.
Captain Quince, if those Sioux did rise, would they attack the fort here?
Hard to say. There's 4,000 of them, and only 400 of us. Shall we go back?
Oh,
Mr. Syberts.
Yes, sir?
Until I return in the morning, you'll act in command of B Troop. I'm taking sergeant course with me. Any questions?
No, sir.
Then escort Miss Lawson back to the major. You'll excuse me, miss?
You're going to see Wild Dog, aren't you?
Yes.
Isn't it pretty dangerous, Captain? Two of you walking right in among all those Sioux?
We'll try to reach Wild Dog first.
But, Captain...
Good night, Miss Lawson.
You are listening to Fort Laramie, starring John Daner as Captain Lee Quince.
Drop your gun belt across your saddle, Sergeant.
Mean that, Captain?
Revolver wouldn't do you much good if these Sioux decide they want us. We're safer unarmed.
All right, sir. Yeah.
Let's move out.
Wished I had at least a bowie knife.
It's late. Most of them are asleep.
4,000 Sioux in this campaign all asleep.
No. We're being watched, all right.
Yeah. Some young buck could get himself his first coup feather by spearing us.
You wouldn't want to stand in the way of a man becoming a brave, would you, Sergeant?
Captain, we're being stopped.
I see him. Keep walking.
Only one brave, we can handle him.
Leave him to me, Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
The only Wild Dog, nya.
Is the ahi.
Il yazo valu. He azo. Let's move, Sergeant. We'll keep an eye on him.
Still just standing there, sir.
I told him I'm a friend of Wild Dog's. Luckily, he's from the same clan.
What clan is that, Captain?
White Fox. There it is. See that medicine pole over there?
With the white skin on it?
That's Wild Dog's lodge. Wait out here, Sergeant. Oyo, Niozia.
Come in, my son. Sit down.
It's been a long time since we've talked, Wild Dog.
A long time. And you come now because of Yellow Knife.
Yellow Knife is leading your young men into war with my people.
Sioux always been warriors. It is good to die in battle. Sioux now have white man's rifles that shoot many times.
And you know about the rifles?
I know. Soon every brave on reservation will know, and they will leave. guard of soldiers make no difference.
It'll lead to war, Wild Dog. Big war.
There are many clans among the Sioux. I am chief only of White Fox.
What clan is Yellowknife?
Yellowknife is of Two Moon Clan.
But there are White Fox braves with him?
Yeah. I cannot stop them. I remember what it was like when I was young.
It was different when you were young, Wild Dog. You had a chance then, but now they have no chance.
They have many rifles.
They have a few, Wild Dog. But the white man, the cavalry, has thousands of rifles. In the end, the Sioux cannot win. He must live in peace or he will be wiped out. You're a wise man. You know this is true.
Yes, you are right.
Yellowknife and his braves will be caught and punished. Some of them will die. But if I don't stop his supply of rifles, many more of your people will die.
You want to know where rifles come from?
Tell me where Yellowknife meets the white man who's supplying them. I'll do the rest. You'll be saving lives, Wild Dog. Sioux lives.
For the sake of my people, I tell you, place north of here, place you call Bright Canyon.
Bright Canyon. When it's over, I'll come back and we'll smoke the pipe.
If you come back.
If I come back. Captain Quince reporting, sir.
I hear you left the post last night, Captain.
Yes, sir.
Well, you never were much of a garrison soldier, were you?
No, sir.
You saw your friend Wild Dog, I suppose?
Yes, sir.
Well, Captain, I have new orders from Washington this morning.
Yes, sir.
As you know, I reported the matter of Yellowknife being supplied with Henry 44s.
You mean I can run him down, Major?
No. My orders to patrol the reservation and to secure Fort Laramie still stand. We are not to go after Yellowknife. But the importance of the Henry Rifles is recognized, and we're to put a stop to it.
Yes, sir.
Can you do it?
I can.
All right, take half of B Troop only. You may have Sergeant Gorse and Lieutenant Syberts and two corporals of your own choosing.
Right, sir.
Pass the head of your column through the main gates of the post 1/2 hour before reveille tomorrow morning.
Yes, sir.
And remember, Captain Quince, your orders are to stop that gun smuggler, not to run down Yellowknife. And if you get into trouble, there'll be no reinforcement. Are there any questions?
No, sir.
Then move out.
Sergeant Gorse.
Yes, sir?
Ride out here with me and take a look at these tracks.
Well, one shod pony, rest of them's mules, Captain.
And they're not Indians, are they?
No, sir.
And they're headed straight for the rim of that canyon ahead.
Bright Canyon, Captain.
Wild Dog wasn't lying. Take 5 men and ride out ahead of Corporal Mercer's point. Make a reconnaissance of the north rim. If it's clear, send a runner back.
Yes, sir.
Tell the point to swing north and to dismount in the cover of those trees below the crest.
Right, sir.
Move out. Yeah.
Mr. Simon!
Yes, Captain.
I think we've found our man, Mr. Syberts. He'll be in that canyon up ahead. Sergeant Gorse is scouting the north rim of the canyon. If it's clear, we'll hide in those trees just below it. Then we'll wait.
Wait for what, sir?
We'll catch him in the act, Mr. Syberts, when Yellowknife comes for his rifles.
Captain,
Captain, you said Major Honeyman's orders are to get the gun smuggler and leave Yellowknife alone. If you do it this way, there'll be a fight.
We're in the field, Mr. Syberts. I'll be responsible for my orders.
Yes, sir.
Not my fault if Yellowknife gets in the way when we move in on that gun smuggler.
No, sir.
Syberts, pass the word to space out and stagger the odd files to the left. We're raising too much dust.
Hey, boat ride.
What are you doing over here, Vickers?
Go on back to your post. Oh, there's nothing happening down there in the valley. He's some gun smuggler. Just sits around in his cabin. What's the matter with Captain Quince, anyway? Half a troop against one man, and we hide around watching him for 2 days.
You can't figure nothing, Vickers. We're waiting for Yellowknife.
Them Sioux? You mean we're going to fight them?
As soon as they show up.
You scared, Bootwright?
All I need's to kill me an Indian. Then I won't be scared no more.
Yeah, me too. I think.
Who's throwing that rock?
It's Gorson, Captain.
Well, get on down there. He's signaling to you.
Oh, I'll catch it now.
You're going away from your post, Vickers.
I couldn't see nothing where I was. I was wondering if Boatwright could, Sergeant.
You can be shot for leaving your post at a time like this, Vickers.
Yes, sir, Captain.
You're risking the life of every man in this troop. Get back to where you belong.
Yes, sir,
Captain. Boatwright wants us.
Come on.
The end of the canyon, sir. Look, there they come. Yellowknife.
How many braves you figure he's got with him, Gorse?
Hard to say yet, sir. Maybe 30.
They got a bunch of horses, too.
That's to pay for the rifles.
Captain, I can see more than 30 Sioux down there. They must be nigh out of 40.
There. There's that dirty gunrunner now. Out talking with Yellowknife.
I wish we had the whole of B troop here, sir.
Sergeant.
Yes, sir?
Take Boatwright and move about 300 yards west of here. When you're ready, I want you to ride straight down into the canyon.
What?
Shut up, Boatwright.
Your orders are to find out if they're really trading for guns down
there. But, Captain...
If you run into any trouble, I'll have to help you out of it, that's all.
I understand, sir. Come on, Boatwright, let's move out.
Well, if all the
crazy... Will you shut up like I told you?
Tell Mr. Syberts there I want to see him.
Right, sir.
You wanted me, Captain?
Mr. Syberts, I think those Sioux down there are trading for Henry rifles. Sergeant Gorse and Boatwright are going to ride down and find out.
You mean they're going alone, sir?
They are. There'd sure be a fight if we appeared in force. Might even look like I was trying to run Yellowknife down.
But they'll be killed, sir.
Well, I can't let that happen. If they're attacked, we'll just have to ride in. It'll be a rescue mission, Mr. Syberts.
I understand, Captain.
Get back to the troop and pass the word to saddle and mount. Space out to 60 paces between mounts. It'll make us look full strength. Move out.
Troops ready, Captain.
Just in time. There go Gorson, Boatwright.
They'll be seen any minute, sir.
Yeah. Let's get back. Get mounted, Mr. Syberts.
Yes, sir.
sergeant Gorse.
Yes, sir.
Where'd the white man go? He wasn't with them up there.
I've never seen him, Captain.
Then he must be in the cabin here. I'm going in after him.
I'll go with you, sir.
Oh, no, you stay with the troop. They've chased them far enough. Get those stolen horses rounded up.
Right, sir. Here.
You're all through, mister. Come out of there.
No. He ain't gonna hang me.
Come out with your hands up and you'll get a trial.
Hanging's bad. I ain't gonna hang.
Your choice, mister. Come out or I'll kill you right there.
I'll take my chances.
Suits me.
Captain, but we killed some of them.
What about Yellowknife?
He's dead. Right over there, sir. Private Boatwright killed him.
Is that Boatwright flying over there too, Mr. Syberts?
I'm afraid so, sir. He took a bullet after he got Yellowknife.
Sergeant Gorse has some men rounding up the horses, Mr. Syberts. Reform the rest of the troop and take care of the wounded. Pick out 6 men for a burial party.
Yes, sir.
Corporal Mercer! Over here!
Boatwright.
Captain, sir?
What can I do for you?
Nothing, Captain. I'm all shut up. There's nothing anybody can do.
That was Yellowknife you killed, Boatwright.
I always wanted to get me a union, Captain. But I sure never figured it'd be Yellowknife.
You did fine, Boatwright.
Here. Here's something I took off Yellowknife. You keep it for me. You know what it is.
Yeah, sure do.
I feel all wet. Inside, yeah.
I'm sorry, Boatwright.
It's all right. I ain't scared.
Of course not.
Tell them all goodbye for me, Captain. All of them.
Just finished going over your report, Captain.
Yes, sir.
And I'm not sure on reading it whether you deliberately disobeyed orders or not. Would you care to clarify that point?
Major Honeyman, did you ever see one of these?
That's a scalp.
Private Boatwright took it off Yellowknife, Major. It's a woman's scalp. Young woman.
Get rid of it.
Yes.
Captain Quince, I'm reporting to Washington that the gun smuggler's been destroyed, but that you were attacked by Yellowknife during the operation and were forced to defend yourself.
Thank you, Major.
That's all, Captain. Captain.
Yes, sir?
Miss Lawson wanted me to ask if you'd care to have supper with us.
My compliments to Miss Lawson, sir. I'll be there.
One more thing. In regard to your recommendation for a posthumous medal for a Private Boatwright.
Yes, sir.
Washington might question a report that recommended an honor for one of the soldiers who actually brought on Yellowknife's attack. For the good of the troop, I'd suggest...
That's all right, Major. Boatwright would understand. He was a real soldier. A line soldier.
Thank you, Captain.
Yes, sir.
Laramie was written by John Meston with music by Rex Corey and was produced by Norman McDonald.
Okay. That was... getting my levels straight here. That was... Fort Laramie. It was an audition program. Original air date was the 25th of July, 1955. Featured John Daner as Captain Quint. Raymond Burr of Perry Mason fame would actually take over the role when the series got underway. I think there was about a 2 or 3 month lapse from the audition program to the actual airing of Fort Laramie. If my recollection is correct, it only lasted one season, with Raymond Burr taking the job as, you know, what everybody remembers him as, Perry Mason. That being said, we got to fulfill an FCC obligation for a moment.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule zero. All guns are always loaded. Rule 1. Never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. Medford.
Thank you, Digital George and Digital Henry, for that gun safety PSA. Again, you're listening to Arthur. This is the Grand Hour and its new time slot from 5 to 6 a.m. on Wednesdays here on 91.5 FM, WMFO, and or WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio. The second half of the double bill, another Western. This is actually what I consider the best of the Grand Hour. I played that audition program of Fort Laramie at some point last fall. In the battle at Tower Rock, it's coming up next. A six shooter. I don't recollect when I played that. This one had an original air date of the 21st of February, 1954. If you're just tuning in, we switched the show from 6 o'clock a.m. to 5 o'clock. If you haven't heard, I play old-time radio dramas here on the Grand Hour. But I'm playing an extra hour this morning, so I'm loading up the Westerns here in the first hour. Again, thanks for listening.
Saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl. Its handle, unmarked. People call them both the six-shooter. James Stewart as the six-shooter. A transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Grit Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories
leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends.
Tower Rock sure was spruced up. Flags on almost every building, a big banner stretched all the way across Main Street, all the way from the roof of the hotel to the top of the Wickford Bank. Franklin County Fair, that's what it said. Prizes, rodeo, free barbecue, Saturday, August 20th, come one, come all. Well, tomorrow would be the 20th. I'd come to town day earlier and be sure of getting a room. Good thing I did, too. Only one left is on the second floor. The livery stable side of the hotel at that. I put my clean shirt in the dresser drawer and headed downstairs. The clock in the lobby said 3:15. Well, that meant I had time to sort of give Tower Rock the once-over before supper. Thought maybe I'd wander over and see how Kermit and Rome were getting along. But just as I was crossing the street, I saw Rome come out of the front door. Rome! Hey! Hey, Rome!
Hmm? Oh, Britt! Well, finally decided to put in an appearance, huh? How are you?
I'm fine, Rome. Fine. I was just on my way over to see you.
You're not running short of cash, are you, Britt?
No. No, this is going to be a social call. Not that I'm flush or anything like that.
Come into town for the fair, huh?
Yeah. I haven't been to one since I don't know when. I figured Dad Morgan's cattle would do without me for a few days, so... Well, how are things with you, Rome?
Oh, so.
Bessie, is she all right?
Oh, pretty well.
Kermit and Thelma?
I guess they're all right.
You guess?
Well, I ain't inquired lately. Well, I better get moving. I told Bessie I'd pick her up at the schoolhouse. She's on the decorating committee. I'll see you later, Brad.
Yeah, I'll see you. I sure couldn't figure out what was the matter with Rome. Well, he froze up when I mentioned Kermit. Right? They'd always been more like kin than in-laws. Folks said it sure was lucky for the Wickford girls to marry two fellows who got along so well, especially after Jess Wickford died and left the bank to both his daughters 50-50. He left it. Kermit and Rome had turned into first-class bankers, too. The Wickford Bank probably is worth about twice as much now than it was when Jess had run it.
Well, hello, Britt. Where'd you come from?
Oh, Kermit. Oh, I was just thinking about you.
About me?
Yeah, well, I ran into Rome a minute ago.
I suppose he was shooting off his mouth again.
What? Well, no.
Well, just don't believe everything you hear, Britt. There's two sides to every story. Remember that.
Sure, Kermit.
Well, I got to be running along. Thelma's at the schoolhouse waiting for me to fetch her home.
Well, you could have saved yourself a trip.
Huh?
Well, that's where Rome was heading to get Bessie. He could have picked her up, Thelma, at the same time.
Why, you don't think they'd ride in the same buggy, do you?
Huh?
Well, I'll probably see you at the fair tomorrow. So long.
Sure. So long. Well, there just wasn't any doubt about it. There's something that happened between the Binghams and the Madden, that's all. There must have been something pretty serious, too, the way Kermit and Rome had been acting. And knowing Thelma and Bessie like I did, I sure was glad I wasn't involved in that. But they were real firm women, Thelma and Bessie. Always had been, ever since they were girls. I couldn't help wondering just what had set them off. Not that it was any of my business, of course, but Otis Spear, you know. Yeah, being the justice of the peace and the local undertaker, he knew almost everything that went on in Foster County.
You ain't never seen nothing like it, Britt, the way they've been behaving. Why, they even spoke to each other for the past 2 months.
You don't say.
Take turns going to church. One Sunday the Binghams attend services, next Sunday the Maddens, just so Thelma and Bessie won't meet up.
Well, that's the darn... I can't believe
it. Well, that ain't the half, Britt, not the half. You remember the Social 16? You know them couples who always got together and played whist on Friday nights?
Yeah.
Well, it ain't the Social 16 no more. The Binghams pulled out, the McDaniels and Johnsons and the Potters, they left at the same time. We got two social eats now.
You mean this foolishness has gone beyond Thelma and Bessie? Other folks are taking sides, too?
Well, see, they are. Whole town split right down the middle.
Well, I never heard of such a thing. Well, how'd it start, anyway?
Well, last May, that was the beginning. Thelma's birthday is the first week in May. Her sister Bessie, just a year younger, almost to the day her birthday's the 10th or 11th, right in there somewhere.
Uh-huh.
Well, seems Kermit bought his wife a new Surrey for a birthday present. Had it shipped all the way out from Kansas City. Thelma sure was proud, too. Well, you can't blame her. It was just about the nicest carriage this town had ever seen. Well, the nicest until it came time for Rome to give Bessie her present the following week.
You don't mean he bought Bessie a Surrey, too?
That's what he did. Well, yeah. Even fancier than the one Kermit gave to Thelma. Yep, a whole lot fancier. Red leather seats with real springs in them, a white top, and painted white wheels. Of course, Rome said it was just a coincidence that he'd ordered Bessie Surrey long before he found out that's what Kermit was giving to Thelma.
Well, and it sounds reasonable, too. He could have done
that. Yeah, some folks think so and some don't. Uh-huh. Kermit and Thelma claimed it was just plain spite work. The Rome and Bessie had always been jealous of them. Anyhow, that Surrey business just seemed to set everybody off, especially the women. Oh, being sisters, I guess they'd had their grievances before, but they'd always held them back. Now they just let fly in all directions. Why, Thelma's even going to...
What were you going to say, Otis?
Oh, nothing, Britt, nothing. you're going to stay for the fair, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, sure. That's why I'm here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking, maybe you wouldn't mind helping me out.
Oh? What?
You see, I'm general chairman of the whole doings, and I got almost everything set except for some of the judging.
Oh, well, I'm not much of an authority, but I guess I can tell a cow from a horse.
Oh, no. We're all fixed up in that department, but the baked goods and preserves and pickles, well, I just haven't been able to find the right person to hand out the blue ribbons there.
Oh, well, I don't know anything about cooking, Otis.
Well, you know about tasting, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's what you got to do, Britt. Sample whatever they put in front of you and say which one tastes the best.
Oh, no, wait a minute.
I'll tell you what. I'll just put you down for preserves. I'll get somebody else to take over the rest of the stuff.
No, but... I got a
meeting of the barbecue committee over at the general store.
Yeah, but...
You'll be at the schoolhouse 9 o'clock in the morning. That's when the judge is supposed to start.
But where... Otis, what... Well, the idea of me giving out blue ribbons for preserves, I couldn't tell peach from grape, one for the color. Well, there wasn't any sense of me standing here in the funeral parlor worrying about it. So I went back to the hotel to fix up for supper. Yeah? Who is it?
Bessie Madden, Britt.
Just a second. Well, won't you come in, Bessie?
Well, thanks.
Hey. Well, you're looking well.
Oh, so are you, Britt. So are you. My goodness, I don't think I've ever seen you look better.
No, now,
Bessie. Well, now, what I come by for was to pick you up and take you over to our house for supper. You don't have no other plans, do you?
No. I was just going to eat here at the hotel.
Oh, you don't think we'd let you eat at the hotel, Britt? Why, you're one of our closest friends, always have been.
Well, I
don't know why Rome didn't invite you when you met up this afternoon. Guess he just took it for granted that you'd know I'd be expecting you. We're having fried chicken, hot biscuits, some of my strawberry preserves. You do like chicken, don't you, Britt?
Oh, sure.
Well, what are we waiting for? I've got my Surrey outside, and I'd be glad...
Well, excuse me, Bessie.
Of course, Britt, of course.
Britt, well, I just heard that you were in Tower Rock, and I wanted to tell you Kermit and I are expecting you for supper. Now, I won't take no for an... Oh, I thought you were alone. Didn't mean to interrupt anything.
You're a little late, Thelma. Britt's having supper with Rome and me.
Might have expected you'd pull a stunt like this, Bessie Madden. Trying to bribe him, huh?
Bribe ladies.
And
ladies,
I suppose you didn't ask him to supper yourself? This is one time you can't lie out of it, though. I heard you with my own voice.
There's no reason I shouldn't ask him. Britt's a friend of mine.
A friend of yours? You've never put yourself out for him before, not once in your whole life.
Bessie.
And since when were you so interested in his welfare?
Thelma.
The minute you found out he was going to be judging the preserves tomorrow, that's when.
Preserves?
As if I had any cause to try and influence him. My strawberry preserves have won first prize at every county fair for the last 10 years.
Yes, but I have never entered against you before. I let you win, but this time it's going to be different.
You're just making a fool of yourself, Thelma. You couldn't cook up a strawberry preserve if your life depended on it. Huh?
I've got Mama's recipe, too, and don't you forget it.
Now, hold on.
And all I have...
Now, hold on. Now, just hold on here, now.
Now, I want to get this straight. Now, both of you have entered your strawberry preserves in the fair tomorrow.
I've entered my preserves. Can't speak her.
No, mine will be there, too. Don't you worry about that.
And I'm supposed to judge between them, is that it?
Oh, the Spear said you'd agreed to do it.
That's right.
Well, Britt...
Just wait till I get my hands on Otis Spears.
Now, Act Two of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponson.
Well, I told Thelma and Bessie that I couldn't have supper with either one of them. As a matter of fact, I kind of plain lost my appetite, I guess. I did take me a while to get rid of them, though. They both of them kept lagging behind, wanting to get the last word in. But finally they went home. Well, Otis Spears wasn't at the funeral parlor, so I went over to Widow Berkeley's boarding house where he lived and waited for him. It was after 9 o'clock before he showed up. Miss Berkeley had already gone to bed, and I heard the front door open. I saw him head for the hall steps. Hold on, Otis.
Huh? Oh, Brad. Well, what are you doing here?
I just wanted you to know that I won't be judging any preserves tomorrow.
What?
You heard me, Otis.
But Brad... You promised you'd do it.
I didn't promise any such kind of a thing. And I don't appreciate your trying to get me in the middle of this feud between Thelma Bingham and Bessie Madden, either.
You found out, huh?
I sure did. Well, they were over to see me, both of them. I never heard such a hen squabble in my whole life.
Well, I told you this thing between them was serious.
Well, there were a few things you didn't tell me, like the fact that they're both entering strawberry preserves at the Doohan's tomorrow.
Well, no, Britt, you don't understand it.
I understand, all right. You didn't want to tackle the job of judging those preserves yourself, so you shifted on me. I understand, all right.
I couldn't judge them, Britt. Don't you see? Whichever way I was to choose, I'd make enemies of half the folks in town. My burying business would drop off 50%.
Now, Otis,
but you're an impartial judge, Britt. You ain't taking no sides in this fracas yet.
And what's more, I don't intend to, either.
Well, of course, that's the way you feel. If you want Thelma and Bessie to go on feuding, and you won't do nothing to stop it.
Well, I sure don't see how my judging their preserves would have anything to do with ending their fight.
It's this way, Britt. You're the six-shooter. Everybody in Tower Rock likes you and respects you, and they all know you ain't got no axe to grind in this affair, so whatever decision you handed down, they'd have to accept it. Both Thelma and Bessie.
Oh, maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't.
Oh, they would, all right. Now, what I'm getting at is this, Brad. Folks have forgotten about the two surreys by now. The argument's going way past that. And these here preserves have just about become the crux of the matter. You see... Bessie's always been known for making the best strawberry preserve in the whole county. They're her chief claim to fame, you might say. Why, she's even took blue ribbons at the state fair.
Oh, that's so.
And nobody's even thought of entering against a nut for years and years.
Not until this year.
Yeah. That's right. Uh-huh. Now, if Thelma's preserve should be judged better than Bessie's, well, that'll mean Thelma's beat her on her own ground. Bessie wouldn't have a leg to stand on. She'd just have to admit that Thelma won out and, well, that might settle the trouble between them.
Mm-hmm. You think that'd be best, Otis, for Thelma's preserves to win?
Well, not necessarily. You see, if Bessie should take the blue ribbon again, well, that'll sort of show everybody that she's still top dog. In the preserve line, anyway. And folks who've been supporting Thelma might swing over to Bessie's side. And that might settle everything, too.
Mm-hmm. The way you've got to figure it out, it wouldn't matter who wins. Either way, the fight would be over, is that right?
That's right. That's it, exactly.
Well...
It's possible that Thelma's taking first prize might just make Bessie madder than ever and sort of add fuel to the fire. And it's possible that if Bessie was to win again, vice versa.
Vice versa, yeah. I'd say it's more than possible. I'd say it's likely.
Oh, now, Britt, you mustn't look on the dark side. I'm absolutely certain that if you make the right decision tomorrow, you'll end this whole thing once and for all. Thelma and Bessie will go back to being fond of each other, and Tower Rock can have a little peace and quiet for change.
I see. And just what is the right decision, Otis?
Why, that's easy, Brett.
It is, huh?
Well, sure. All you have to do is give the blue ribbon to whichever one made the best tasting preserves. You don't think we're running a crooked county fair, do you?
Well, sir, I never saw a fellow like Otis Spears. He could talk circles around a Philadelphia lawyer. Well, finally, I saw that if I was going to get any sleep at all that night, I'd just have to give in. But I made up my mind to one thing. I wasn't going to have Thelma or Bessie turning on me, either one of them. I was going to say that their preserves tasted exactly the same and call it a tie. And that way there wouldn't be any harm done, and I'd be leaving things just the way I found them. Of course, I didn't tell Otis what I was planning to do or anything. I just promised that I'd meet him at the schoolhouse in the morning.
Good. I knew you'd come around, Britt. When you saw how much I needed you, I knew you couldn't let me down.
Well, Otis...
I'll walk you to the door.
Never mind. I'm fine way out. Night.
Night, Britt. See you tomorrow.
Yeah.
There was one thing I forgot to tell you. It sort of slipped my mind.
What's that?
Well, in case you have any trouble deciding as to whose preserves are the best, well, there couldn't be a tie.
There couldn't be. Why not?
Could call it a tie, but that would still mean that Thelma had won.
How's that?
Well, don't you see, Brett? If Thelma's strawberry preserves are just as good as Bessie's, well, folks would think that Thelma had been letting her sister win all these years by not contesting with her before. No, a tie would be the same as giving the prize to Thelma. You do see that, don't you?
Yes. Sure. Well, so long.
So long, Rick. And may the best woman win.
Britt. Britt.
Oh, hello, Kermit. You're up pretty late, aren't you?
Yeah, I've been looking for you.
For me? Oh.
Yeah, well, Brett, I think this quarrel between Thelma and Bessie and between Rome and me and all the rest of it, I think it's gone entirely too far.
You do? Well, I'm glad to hear you say so.
But if Bessie and Rome won't come to their senses, well, they've just got to be taught a lesson. Maybe Thelma's right. Maybe the fair tomorrow is the place to do it.
What?
Well, at least everybody will be there to see Bessie when she gets her comeuppance. That is, if Thelma's strawberry preserves... what I'm getting at is this. Now, Thelma's just got to win, Britt. If she don't, my life will just be miserable. And Thelma's got a real knack for making me miserable.
Well, I'm Rome.
Hope you don't mind my waiting here in your room, but I just had to see you.
I'm going to go ahead and tease that episode. Battle at Tower Rock. Original air date, the 21st of February, 1954. It's the six shooter. For those just tuning in, the grand hour has moved from 5 to 6 instead of 6 to 7 on Wednesdays. And I play old-time radio, dramas from the 30s, 40s, 50s, so even into the 60s and a little bit into the 70s, occasionally. That show was a double feature of Westerns, Fort Laramie audition program, followed by the six shooter. I wanted to show the spectrum of the Western with the violence, the very violent audition program, and the very more lighthearted Battle at Tower Rock. Who knows who wins the